Well, welcome everyone to another edition of Maze Pants. I am Maze and Brew Dave.
I am Hawkeye State.
And we are here to talk Big Ten football with you guys. We figured there was a little bit of a lack of Big Ten knowledge on the interwebs. So, for some reason, two fools that know nothing decided to team up and talk about it.
That's the way it usually goes.
It usually is. This week, we're welcoming Graham Filler from Off-Tackle Empire, formerly of Rivalry Esquire fame. But before we get into our first caller, there's a lot of stuff going on around the Big Ten. Hawkeye State, what's the status on Brandon Wager?
Brandon Wager is currently backpacking through the mountains of Peru. No, actually, we don't really know where Brandon Wager is.
Is he a Shining Path rebel now?
Yes, exactly. He has joined a convent. The Iowa angry running back hating god. Angry Iowa running back hating god, which we're starting to refer to as airbag, has struck again this week with the Wager. Yeah, Wager's still gone. Jewel Hampton, who could be a starter eventually, is suspended for week one because of a run-in with law enforcement over the summer.
And by run-in, you mean...
He started a bar fight. Yes. Well, he technically wasn't hit for the bar fight itself. He was hit for being in a bar after 10 o'clock while being 21 and I think a public intox. But he is not going to be playing in week one. Adam Robinson, who would technically be the starter, has missed it a couple days this week because of an undisclosed injury. And one of the incoming freshmen, a four-star behemoth of a back named Marcus Coker, is out for the season with a shoulder injury. Could be a broken clavicle. Nobody seems to be disclosing exactly what it is. And so that leaves us with the threat level on Paki O'Meara, the apocalypse level, up to a ripe orange bordering on full-fledged red. Paki could be starting his third straight season opener in 2 weeks.
Wow, that's kind of a that's almost a nectarine in terms of your fear level.
In related news, I'm on a complete alcoholic bender right now. Just so you guys know.
Why shouldn't you be, really?
Exactly. You know, when your season of great promise and hope is crashing down before your eyes because you don't have a halfback again, you got to just, you know, roll with the punches, and nothing helps that more than Jack Daniels. Speaking of angry position-hating gods, the Michigan corners, Dave, Wolf Oak and his friend.
As far as I can tell, Wolf Oak's done for the year. The word on the street is that he dislocated his ankle and has a fibula, whatever the smaller bone is. I believe it is the fibula fracture. And if that's the case, there is no way in hell he is getting back on the field this year. I had the same thing. There's nothing really quite like having a plate and screw stuck in your ankle. And it really depends on the severity of the break. And that's just obviously something I can only speculate at. But, you know, if it's just a hairline fracture, you know, maybe they can cast it and a little physical therapy rebuilds everything. If it's a clean break, no way. He's not coming back. We'll be lucky to get him back for next year. It leaves Michigan in a really rough spot, but it's not like Troy Wolfolk was the difference between a 12-0 season and, you know, going 3-9. I mean, Wolfolk maybe is at best a game in terms of value to the team, because, you know, while he was a returning cornerback, it's not like he was everybody's preseason All-American.
Right.
I mean, he was a good cornerback. I think he had the potential to be a very good cornerback, but what's going to end up happening is JT Floyd, who is a redshirt sophomore or a full sophomore this year, he moves over to the number one slot. I suspect that a freshman coming in, Cullen Christian, he was rated as, I want to say, between 3 and 8 in terms of the top corner in his class this year. will come in and start at the number two slot. I have a feeling that Floyd and Christian will flip by about the second week in terms of who's the top cornerback. And then there are also Tarik Jones, who is a converted running back, who has just insane speed and actually showed some decent ability during the spring game, will probably take over at that third slot. There's also rumors that Courtney Avery, who's a converted quarterback who has played corner for the last 2 years in high school, could see some time just because the kid is, like, apparently he's really smart. And that's just a strange thing to say in a sarcastic manner, but the kid, he had offers from Northwestern. He had actually originally committed to Stanford and, strangely enough, committed to Michigan for the academics, as well as the nice big offer that we gave him. But he could very well end up playing this year as well. So there's no depth, but there was no depth before. There was no depth when Justin Turner transferred because he was playing on the fourth team at this point. So, you know, it's one of those things where you look at it and go, well, it would have been really nice to have our starting cornerback back, but you know, at this point, I've just taken to drinking like you have.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking to score some smack, maybe shoot that drink, maybe hey. Take my mind off things for a while.
Man, take it from me. Don't be a hero. Don't fight the pain.
I'm just going to chase the dragon for the rest of the offseason.
There you go. Well, our teams aren't the only ones that are banged up. I think that the other prominent team that's really seen some serious injuries over the last couple of weeks is Wisconsin. They've gotten hit hard. Safety Jay Valai missed a couple practices this week with an undisclosed injury. It sounds like it's a leg thing, but no, and he had crutches, which isn't a good thing, but no one's really quite sure what the problem is. Jordan Cohote, I think is how you say it, is out.
Yeah, one of their defensive tackles.
Yeah, their linebacker, Sorensen, has a leg injury. Mike Taylor's still out. They've got a lot of holes right now.
And, you know, we'll probably get into this when Graham's on, but I mean, every one of those guys are starters or at least competing for starting slots. And
Yeah. They
don't return a lot of people on that defense. If any of those guys are out for any extended period of time, that's going to be a real problem. I mean, Wisconsin can grind 9 minutes off a quarter like nobody else, but eventually they're going to get stopped. And if that defense is as banged up as it sounds, this is really going to kind of knock down my prediction as Wisconsin's the Big Ten champion this year. So they better get healthy in a big hurry.
Yeah, Bielema is not going to make it look stupid. All right, they're going to win the damn thing. I'm certain. They just don't know how they're going to do it anymore. The good news for Wisconsin this week, brand new practice facility. New locker rooms.
$73 million, I believe it was.
Yeah, it's going to be expensive. It's going to make Tim Brewster shudder because his one last recruiting tool, other than himself, is getting upped by his neighbors. The best part of it is that they're getting $26 million in gifts to pay for this. There isn't $26 million in Wisconsin. I have no idea where this is coming from, but
it's all cheese money.
Exactly. Well, and that's what I figured is it's going to be like, it's going to be dedicated to, you know, there's going to be a new locker room, a new weight training facility, and then, like, just stand after stand of cheese curds at bratwurst.
How do you think they get so big on the offensive line?
Exactly. Hey, look, Iowa, we do it, too. We have different ways of doing it, but we find our way. I mean,
you guys do it like cattle. You just feed them corn until they get big. At Wisconsin, they feed you meats and protein. That's why they get so damn
big. Hey, go to the Iowa State Fair and tell me it's all corn. Believe me. There's a lot of fried food involved here.
I was about to say, yeah, it was deep fried corn.
I was there last night. I had deep fried green beans, cheese curds, some sort of fried baguette thing that was just fantastic. And
fried.
Yes, and then I had a key lime pie on a stick covered in chocolate.
I can actually hear you getting fatter.
Yes, I'm like 800 pounds now. We'll be on this podcast because I can't get up. It was beautiful.
Are you sweating grease right now? I'm just curious.
I had to go home and run 8 miles just to feel better. Yeah, it wasn't pretty.
It's just disgusting.
I love the Iowa State Fair. It's the best thing ever. Anyway, other news from around the conference. It's been pretty quiet this week because everybody kind of goes underground to get ready for the one last run up to league play with games starting on the second and most of them game play in the fourth. it's been a relatively quiet week around the conference other than the injury bug and the news out of Wisconsin.
You know what's weird, though, too, is that there are a lot of teams that really seem to be, you know, knock on wood, coming through this fairly unscathed. Penn State seems like they're actually coming out of the woods without anything major going wrong. I mean, I'm discounting the quarterback situation, but that's not injury-related.
Right.
Ohio State somehow has gone completely under the radar this offseason when you talk about just going through fall practice with the, you know, the big old, you know, anvil hanging over their head that is, you know, league favorite.
Yeah.
And then you look at Northwestern's been very, very quiet as well, and I'm scared to death of that team. And the only other team I can think of is Purdue, that another very, very potent offense with, you know, some spots on defense. But, you know, you've got three teams that are having an injury bug, and that's it, which is really strange. I mean, you either think that something really horrible is going to happen over the next 2 or 3 weeks, or that somehow the Big Ten is actually going to get into the out-of-conference games relatively unscathed, which...
It's new.
Yeah, it also pertains really well for the year.
Well, yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, if you can get out of August without hurting yourself, you got a much better chance of hurting somebody else in September. But, you know, it has been kind of an odd off season. It's because it's been that quiet. I mean, Ohio State has message control down almost as much as they have ball control. I mean, they really do keep everything under wraps. And, you know, no matter how rabid the local media is, you don't usually see a whole lot coming out of their camp. The Northwestern thing surprises me a little bit because there is a little bit of buzz about them. I've got them in my top 20 in my preseason blog poll, which is completely insane. But the reason I put them there is that, and I've been talking about this for about a month now, and people are tired of hearing me say it, but their schedule for the first 2 months of the season is so incredibly winnable that they might just get on a roll. I mean, that's a team that I could see, you know, jumping past Penn State or Iowa or Wisconsin and getting themselves into the top four in the conference just because, you know, they could get to November at, you know, 7-1, 8-0, you know, and have all the momentum going for them and then, you know, pick one off out of Penn State and Iowa and get up into the upper echelon.
I mean, I'm looking at their schedule. Vanderbilt, Illinois State, Rice, Central Michigan, Minnesota, Purdue, Michigan State, Indiana.
Those are all winnable.
Those are all winnable. They have their two toughest games on the road are Penn State and at Wisconsin.
Yeah.
If Northwestern's on a roll by the time they hit Penn State, I would be scared out of my mind as a Lions fan.
Well, and the counterpoint to that is, listen, you know, watch history. Watch it repeat itself again, and they'll drop a game out of that non-conference slate that looks so easy, you know, probably at Rice, which is...
Sam McGuffey is going to go insane. Yeah,
which rivals, correct me if I'm wrong here, that is at Rice, correct?
Believe it or not, it is at Rice. That, there are other football stadiums in Texas.
Yes, that rivals Minnesota at Middle Tennessee State for most ridiculous non-conference home game, or non-conference road game. Also, you know, Indiana selling a home game.
Yeah, we have to mention that every time we talk about ridiculousness.
Poor Bill Lynch doesn't know what the hell to do with himself. Yeah, aside from that, it's been a pretty quiet week. I mean, even Illinois is quiet. How the hell is that even happening?
Well, you know, Zook's out water skiing and his voice is a little raspy. So.
Zook's out skiing to IKEA to buy some more appliances.
Zook's out shopping for a new house because he ain't going to be at his job much longer.
Yeah.
But I'm in shock that it's been that quiet. I mean, the things that I've heard a little bit about that are going to affect the Big Ten in some strange ways are Notre Dame seems to be having a very, very, very good fall camp, which as a Michigan fan, but also as a Big Ten fan, I mean, they've got games against Michigan State and Purdue. And I mean, those are those three teams are going to make up the middle of the Big Ten. I mean, they're going to be that middle portion. And if Notre Dame comes out of that, you know, 2-1 or God forbid 3-0, that's not going to be a good thing for the conference because Notre Dame is going to sweep through the rest of their schedule relatively easily with the exception of USC and maybe Stanford.
Yeah.
But, I mean, then they're going to end up, you know, if that's the case, let's say they go 2-1, they end up at 9-3 and end up going to a BCS bowl and then end up getting crushed by somebody. Notre Dame, no matter what people say, is going to be affiliated with the Big Ten, once that's all said and done with, because they're a Midwestern team, they recruit.
Sure. And they can look back, if they're 2-1 against the conference, they can look back and say, well, Notre Dame is basically one of you guys, played 3 of you, beat 2 of you, and still got crushed. Not to mention the fact that if Notre Dame takes a spot, you can almost guarantee there's not going to be a second Big Ten spot open.
I think that's dead on. And what the tough thing is going to be is that if it does end up being, you know, Ohio State, Iowa, Wisconsin, or flop that around any other way, I mean, those three teams, in my mind, can compete with anybody. I'm not sold on Penn State yet, but those top three teams we just mentioned, we saw what Iowa did to Georgia Tech, the ACC champion. And we also saw what Penn State did to LSU and what Northwestern did to Auburn. You know, if they have a field goal kicker that can make anything, I mean, that's another feather in the cap for the Big Ten. But I just, if it ends up where we end up getting one Big Ten team and Notre Dame, that's just going to be a real downer for everybody. So Michigan, Michigan State, and Purdue, take note. You got some work to do because Notre Dame's having a pretty good fall camp.
Well, if we're discussing the rest of the bottom feeders, might as well bring on Graham. Do you agree with that one?
Oh, I think you are dead on, Graham. We're going to bring you in to talk a little Big Ten football here. So let me give a proper introduction to our friend Graham Filler. All right, joining us here tonight is Graham Filler of Off Tackle Empire, formerly the Rivalry Esquire. As you probably have guessed by that, he is indeed a lawyer, and none of us really know why. But Graham has been good enough to join us tonight, talk a little bit of Big Ten football. And Graham, good to have you here, buddy.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on. There's nothing I like better than Big Ten football.
Well, you're definitely doing your best to sell that part. But, hey, man, we talked about this off-air a little earlier. One of the things that I'm actually really curious about is Michigan State this year. Everyone seems to be picking them as this dark horse team. But, I mean, and maybe it's my Michigan bias, but I look at the team and I see a competent quarterback, some good wide receivers, but I don't see a whole lot else. I mean, what's your take on Michigan State this year?
I've got three things, if I may. Number one, they got great linebackers, and that's going to be a boon because the Big Ten is a linebacker conference, because if you can't stop the run, you're toast. I mean, you're just done because someone's going to run on you. Number two, I was at a bar in Chicago with Dave during the World Cup, and everybody was cheering, and you know, it was before the game started, singing the national anthem, and the soccer or the Scottish friend, or was he Scottish or Irish?
Oh, he's full-blood Mick, buddy. He's from Dublin.
Oh God, yeah, he's an alcoholic, born an alcoholic. He turns to me and he goes, you know, in 15 minutes, they're all going to realize, damn it, we're watching soccer. And that's how I feel about Michigan State, is that people are going to be real high on them, and I've got them starting out real hot, but something always brings them down to life. I mean, they've won 10 games, I believe, twice in the last 40 years or so.
I think that's probably right.
Well, now you guys have had a front row seat to the carnage. I mean, you know, whether it was John L. or Bobby or the guys who were even before those, you know, way back to, I guess, Saban possibly. But, you know, the death spiral, the Michigan State annual death spiral still exists in one form or another. D'Antonio's trying to take it out of play here. But, you know, what is your theory on why Michigan State implodes come mid-October, and are they, like, hopeless to stop this from happening?
Well, I mean, just look at last year's Michigan-Michigan State game. Michigan's offense is toast. They got nothing. 4 CAs injured, and frankly, they can't even stop a bubble screen on defense. So what does D'Antonio do is he goes conservative, and he essentially keeps the game close for Michigan, who, of course, goes on this improbable 92-yard comeback, two-minute drill ending with a 4-CA touchdown pass in the rain. So it's like we had the extreme in John L. Smith, who, you know, pissed away games by slapping himself and onside kicks with a starting quarterback and all this crazy stuff, throwing against Notre Dame in the fourth quarter. And then you got D'Antonio, who goes the exact opposite and gets too conservative. And this is an issue because they have a great offensive coordinator who knows how to harness Cousins. And this year they don't have to worry about Nickel taking all the snaps. So I don't know. It's like coaching, you know. Last year they ran a 4-3, and it was just a bad scheme the whole year, and they ran the same thing. You remember Iowa? You remember what Iowa's coach said afterwards? when they ran that pass to McNutt, we knew what was happening.
We knew what they were doing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
they did the famous PlayStation when they motioned McNutt to the left, and because a guy followed him, they knew they were in man. I mean, really? Really?
Well, it's not that complicated. It's what Iowa does all the time.
No.
We've made the game incredibly simple. This is the beauty of being an Iowa fan, is we really only run about six plays on offense. We run one play on defense, and we win 11 games. No one's really quite sure how.
You guys are the Super Tecmo Bowl of college football.
That's exactly what it is, yeah. We guessed right at that Bo Jackson toss play. Boom. Blow it up.
Neil Anderson to the bottom of the screen over and over and over again.
Well, that's what happened in the Orange Bowl. You know, we figured out that Paul Johnson was just running the left arrow B on every play, and we just kept picking left arrow B, and Claiborne was in the backfield before you knew it.
Yep. Well, Graham, I want to stay on Michigan State for one more question here. You mentioned, like, the first thing you said when you talked about Michigan State was their linebacking core. Is that linebacking core good enough to carry their defense? I mean, they've got some holes on the defensive line. They got some holes in the defensive backfield. Is that linebacking core going to make up for those mistakes, or is this just one of those things that's just going to kind of stem the bleeding before, you know, the Spartans finally bleed out on the year?
Oh, you make a great question. It's all about cohesiveness in this world, whether it's dating, you know. It's great if she's a good-looking girl, but if she's an idiot, what are you going to do? They got great linebackers. They've got no secondary. And you know, how long can that hold up? It held up for about 2 seconds last year against Montana State, and then they gave up the most passing yards in Michigan State history, possibly in, like, Big Ten history. They made Adam Weber look good.
You just made Hawkeye State's day ragging on Minnesota.
Oh, it's so wonderful.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for. So, no, look, the defensive line needs to get pass pressure. They had very few sacks last year. They could stop the run all day with Jarrell Worthy and other people. But this year they got to get pressure, and they've got to mix up their schemes. I mean, you know, you don't want Greg Jones just sitting there making tackles on five-yard passes all day. You want him blitzing. You want him coming from the outside. You want him doing all kinds of things.
Well, you brought up one of my favorite topics, and I can't let you go without talking about it. Because
Adam Weber?
Minnesota football in general.
Thank you for that.
Yes, hey, that's a Freudian slip right there. I know where you guys are going this year. So, Graham, last year we talked about Minnesota, and it was possibly the funniest moment in the Black Heart Gold podcast pantheon, and that's saying something. So, here on May's Pants, let's talk Minnesota. Last year Adam Weber had some difficulty, mostly I think because he probably missed most of August camp injured, never really got himself into 100% playing shape. If you talk to Brewster, that's what he'd tell you.
He was tremendous.
He was tremendous, though. He had heart, soul, win, fight, try. So, how bad is Minnesota going to be this year? Is Adam Weber going to take another step forward, or has he hit his peak? And does Tim Brewster survive this season?
Oh, God. I'm not answering the Brewster question, but there are three ways Weber can go. One, we can pull a mismanaged Juice Williams 2009 situation where you have tremendous loyalty to your quarterback, so even though he's train wrecking, you kind of keep him in, you sub him out, then you put him back in, and then you sub him out, then he gets hurt. You know, you don't know what you're doing. It's basically a cluster. And then, two, you can let him muddle through and have another 5-7, 6-6 year. Or three, they can just dumb things down a little. I mean, he's an athletic guy. Let him make a play or two, because last year he was put in situations to fail. Legitimately put in situations to fail.
Well, do you trust this coaching staff to figure that out and actually fix things? Because I don't.
I don't know if there's a way I can know. I mean, it's fourth offensive coordinator in 4 years. I'm not sure if there's anything to know there. But here's what I got to say, though. Everybody remembers last year, or everybody who watches Minnesota football remembers, them basically taking Adam Weber aside and saying, hey, Adam, what throw can't you make? And he said, well, I really can't make that 10-yard sideline route. And they go, okay, let's run that 10-yard sideline route three times. And then run it up the middle. It was ridiculous, and I know Fish didn't fit at all. He was like a fish out of water, and it was not good.
Wow. I need a rim shot for that one.
Yeah, so if they need to dumb it down, they need to, because, I mean, the guy's, Weber's head's got to be spinning. I mean, you know, I can barely do my job. How's he supposed to do his with a different boss again?
It's kind of funny that, you start talking about all these coaches kind of getting replaced, because it's usually the sure sign of a guy that's really having trouble. And, I mean, I put Rodriguez in this category as well, having to replace Scott Schaefer after year one. But Tim Brewster is in some serious trouble in Minnesota, and I don't know that switching offensive coordinators again was that good an idea. But that also is a nice little segue into somebody who changed over his entire coaching staff and is a source of much joy and entertainment to this podcast.
Yay!
Our friend Don Zook.
Ah.
I got to ask you, is there any way in hell he saves his job this year? Is there any way this team wins 5-6 games so it looks like there's some kind of improvement?
Who are you asking me?
Yep.
Are we talking about Minnesota still?
No, we've moved on.
Oh, we moved on to our friend Ron Zook.
Oh, my God. I was hoping we'd miss that. Every single star defensive player they've had has underperformed. Magically underperformed or become injured. And whatever that says, I mean, why? I don't know. But they don't have the magic potion in Champaign-Urbana right now. I don't know how he saves his job. If he wins 8 games, maybe, but I don't know how they win 8 games. Does anyone know who their quarterback is right now, by the way?
Nathan Schilheis.
Is it Schilheis?
Yeah, he's been named starter. Redshirt freshman. Was an Iowa recruit. Iowa went after him and thought they had a pretty decent chance of getting him until Zook pulled his magic, as usual.
There is no real quarterback named Schilheis. Stop your lying.
Yeah. Nathan Schilheis. He's, they seem to like him a lot. Whether that means a whole lot, I don't know, because they like Juice Williams a lot, too. But I think if you're going to get an Illini quarterback with Ron Zook, you probably want to get him early. The track record there seems to be that if they're like a freshman or a sophomore and they haven't been like, you know, filled with, you know, whatever crap it is that Zook is spewing, that they're usually in pretty good shape, but the regression begins quickly.
So let's move back to that thing. What do you think? I mean, come on, Graham, what do you think about this? Is Illinois going to be even remotely close, or are they just going to end up at the bottom of the league?
Again, and their late season swoons are legendary now in the last couple of years. They look interested early. I mean, if you remember that Missouri game in 2009, they played extremely hard. Even though Juice Williams was being put in the shotgun to throw outs, it's that old, you know, what throw can't you make, Juice? And he goes, I can't throw the out. And they go, throw the out. They were playing extremely hard. They held Missouri, which was actually decent at that time, for, you know, 3 points in like the first two quarters or something. So, I mean, you know, they play hard early, but they lose concentration and essentially bail late in the season. So I don't see anything above 4 wins, and I don't think anyone else does on off tackle.
Well, and the other problem they've got this year is the schedule is so terrible for them. I mean, they're not going to probably beat Missouri. Missouri looks like they could be pretty decent. They play directional Illinois twice. Although Northern Illinois could be sneaky.
Hey, they got a great quarterback.
They got a really good quarterback, yep.
Yep. They turn out a run game pretty much every year. I mean, and they always are the scrappy underdog. They should have beat Wisconsin last year.
Yep. Yeah. But then they start big. Illinois starts Big Ten play. They should be 2-1. Maybe 1-2, maybe 3-0, but probably 2-1 to start Big Ten play. And then they get Ohio State at Penn State at Michigan State right out of the gate, and they're not going to win any of those 3 games. And then it becomes the battle of who can care less the rest of the way down the schedule. They get Indiana at home, Purdue at home, at Michigan, Minnesota at home, at Northwestern. They'll be lucky to take 2 of them. By then, I don't think anyone's going to care.
Right. Yeah, that late season swoon is horrible. How about you guys? What are your Illinois predictions?
I think 4 wins is lucky.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they could be as bad or worse than Michigan in 2008. I mean, that team just looks awful.
Thank God that Minnesota's in the conference, though. They might save them.
I think it's a race to the bottom on, between those two teams, but that does bring us.
Speaking of race to the bottom, Indiana.
Nice segue, my friend. I was doing the same thing.
Yeah, see, that's what you do. Tonight is bottom feeder night here on Maze Pants. Indiana, you know, kind of a mystery. A lot of really decent talent on offense, some pretty decent to borderline good skill position players. Defense is a complete overhaul. Only two starters coming back, if I remember correctly. Graham, do they have any hope of making a run into the middle of the conference, or are they destined to join Minnesota and Illinois and the other collective bottom feeders?
Again, and I always see this as a good philosophy, especially in a very predictable college football world. Show me something, you know? Since when has Indiana been a winning team? Well, they went 7 wins, maybe 6 wins a couple years ago, the Hepner inspiration year. A Miami of Ohio man, I must say, like myself. And then before that, I don't think they'd had a winning season since 1990. So essentially, we might as well talk about them like a 4-win, 5-win team. And especially, last year at least they had some defenders who could step up. I mean, but this year they're toast. As John Franz put on off tackle the other day, he said possibly the worst defense in the conference. And I mean, frankly, when you're starting a white safety, you're going to have issues if it's not Iowa.
Yes, I was going to say, I about jumped out of my chair. But if it's not Iowa, okay, I'll give you that. Their schedule's brutal. They get Michigan, Ohio State, Iowa, Wisconsin, Penn State. They don't miss anybody.
But they also have Clemson, Western Kentucky, Akron, and
right.
Arkansas
no.
State. I mean, their non-comp is a joke.
Their non-comp's a joke, but that'd be the only 4 games they're going to win, maybe.
But they could steal 2 games and get into a bowl game, can't they? Is that possible? With that offense, it's certainly not out of the realm of possibility.
Hey, it's all about cohesion. When your defense is giving up 40 points, your offense gets tired from sitting on the sidelines and watching the other team run around like it's Bo Jackson and Techno Ball.
Well,
conversation comes full circle.
And we've gone back to Techno Ball. I love it.
But I love, Dave, let me say, I love Ben Chappell. He doesn't throw a great ball. His mechanics are decent. But he gets it done. I mean, to be going up against athletes, you know, 2 times the size, like a JV team, to be going up against Big Ten defenses and scoring some points, throwing some nice fade patterns to those huge, huge, talented wide receivers, you know, it's almost like it's a real football team.
They're one James Hardy away from being legitimate.
Yeah.
They're 4 James Hardys away from being legitimate. What are you talking about? Did James Hardy play safety?
No, he was receiver.
Well, let's move on to a couple of different position battles that are coming up that are in full bloom. I think the one that everyone is really curious about is Penn State. Penn State seems to have a lot going on defense. They got a lot going on offense. But the big concern for Penn State, no matter who you talk to, is who's going to take the first snaps at center. Who do you have in the quarterback battle at this point?
Yeah, again, there's and you're going to have to correct my pronunciation if I'm wrong. McGoin, Newsom, and Jones. Everybody said Jones looked better than everybody. He's the 5-star. Is he a 5-star or 4-star? Somebody want to correct me on that?
He was a 5-star, I believe.
Yeah, he could have been. I think he was splitting the services.
Okay, all right. Well, obviously, everybody said he looked better and threw a better ball than Newsom. And then you've got Newsom, who's got this, like he's trying to pull a high-five God delivery, throwing the ball above everybody's head in the spring game and, frankly, in high school, too. And, you know, you want to turn him into like a power runner a la Michael Robinson, who's now a fullback, which is kind of wild. And then you've got McGoin, sort of the token backup. So, I mean, it's a train wreck, but they've got to start Newsom because of potential. So potential is upside, is off the chart.
I mean, what do you think about Robert Bolden? Did I miss something? Is he still in the competition, or
somebody want to help me out?
Yeah, I don't think Paterno's going to start a true freshman. I just don't think they're going to do it. I think him and Jones have, from what I hear, have looked pretty good. But unless there's a complete meltdown with the two guys who have a little bit of experience.
Well, I think you've got a real good chance of a meltdown. I mean, Newsom has looked absolutely awful, no matter what anyone wants to say. So
again, he's got the loop delivery. You know, it's Terrell Pryor, except Newsom's tries to correct it by throwing over the top, and instead releases the ball like he's trying this high five delivery. Not pretty.
Do you think that Evan Royster can carry that offense until somebody actually steps up at quarterback, or is this something that no matter what happens, it's going to cost Penn State 2-3 games?
I don't put anything past Penn State winning a lot of games because, again, the defense always materializes in an almost Iowa-like fashion, and someone always makes a play. So, you know, offensively, except, you know, in the years, in the dark years of the early 2000s. So I don't put anything past them. You know, I think we've got them winning typically maybe 8 games, and that's with an unknown quantity of quarterback. That's how much faith people have.
Bold. You're a bold man, Graham. I like how you do that.
Yeah, I just don't want to get killed by BSD.
Yeah, I understand. It's tough. You have to watch out for yourself there.
What do you guys say?
Well, as far as Penn State goes, for me, I'm with you. Look, until they prove that they can't win with spare parts and paper mache, I'll go ahead and keep believing it. They've got enough, downtime early on. Alabama, they're not going to beat no matter who they got at quarterback right now.
They got a surprisingly tough game against Temple. I mean, Temple was a pretty good ball team last year, and they're bringing people. And I know it's just Temple.
No, I think Temple's a very good team, but I also think it's week 4, and by then you probably should have everything more or less worked out. You're not going to be rotating quarterbacks by then, at least.
They go straight from Temple to Iowa, so it's...
they're not going to beat Iowa. What, are you kidding? They never beat Iowa. We own Penn State. Yeah, that's right. Bring it on, BSD. they have kind of an interesting route to get there. I mean, they do have in October and early November, they got 4 games they can win. They got 3 at home out of that stretch, and they got at Minnesota, which is practically a home game for everybody. They could probably win 9-10 games here. They just probably won't beat Alabama, Iowa, and Ohio State. And the rest of them are all, toss-ups or better.
Yeah, and they also have that wonderful little home game with Indiana in the in Landover, which must be mentioned every time we talk about Penn State and Indiana.
Yes, that's a shame.
Indiana should be kicked out of the Big Ten for that one. That's just me. I get a little bitter about that.
Graham, when we had one of your, I talked to one of your colleagues, Bama Hawkeye, the other day.
I'm sorry.
On another podcast, and he said, he made a very good point. He said, there's the schedule that gets you to a bowl game, and there's the schedule that gets you to the national championship game. You know, if you've got a team that's barely bowl eligible, you might win 6 or 7 games. The one thing you want is to get the really bad teams on, or the really good teams on the road, because you're not going to win those games anyway, so you might as well save a game for a team you can beat. Penn State's got an eerily close schedule to that. When you're playing at Alabama, at Iowa, at Ohio State, you're probably not going to win any of those 3. And if you can get, 8 wins out of the rest, that's not a bad year. When you're completely overhauling your defense and trying to find a quarterback, 8 wins isn't too bad.
It's true. It's just kind of hard to accept because, it's Penn State. And we make a joke on Off Tackle that, Penn State thinks they're an elite program, but they're not. That's sort of a running joke that we have. But honestly, they have high expectations across the board. And that's a really good thing because that keeps tradition up. That's why BSD is such a popular website, because every year for 9 or 8 months, they believe that they're going to be big-time winners, go to a big-time bowl. And so that puts pressure on everybody. But pressure can bring results.
Sure. And pressure could make a redshirt quarterback fold like a fajita. All right, the big question: who you got? Gold, silver, bronze, Graham? Who you got winning this year?
Oh, in the Big Ten?
In the Big Ten.
Well, essentially, Ohio State will either win or tie, and I only say this because my new shtick, my new thing is defensive toughness, because defensive toughness covers up for a whole bevy of sins, and Ohio State has it in spades. And then you got Wisconsin second and Iowa third.
Are you saying our defense is soft?
I'm saying all of those defenses are badass.
I will punch you in the groin for saying that our defense is soft.
Oh, my God, I'll punch you in the baby maker. Listen to me.
Straight shot right in the ovaries.
J.J. Watt, he's a 280-pound, I think he's a DT. I don't really know. He could be a DN. He's got a body for both. And he was a 210-pound CMU tight end who transferred and caught some balls as a freshman from LeFevre, transferred, put on like 70 pounds, and now is like an NFL. Looks like he could go to the NFL pretty easily. Anyway, I want to tell you a story about him real quick. He was on an MTV show. Have you guys seen this?
I made a vow when I was 22 to never watch MTV again, and I've been holding
it. I'll tell you all about Jersey Shore later in this podcast. So he gets on, and he's the special love interest of one of the girls, and she's like, oh, JJ, so sweet. And it was like the craziest thing I've ever seen. Anyway, 280 pounds. He's the key to that defense. I know they lost the Schofield to the NFL, but I mean that's the most returning starters in the league in Wisconsin. I think it's 18 or something.
Yeah, they've got a lot of people coming back. I think they got 16 coming back, and one of them's a specialist. Two of them are specialists.
Hey, all right, asshole, way to show me up, huh?
Well, you asked. I just told you. I mean, I agree with you. I think Wisconsin's defense is going to be very, very good this year. The only issue is whether or not they can stay healthy. I think they lost Valai. He's out with an exposed injury, and they've already got one of their linebackers. They've got one of their defensive tackles. I mean, they've got four guys out that are competing for starting slots. I mean, this isn't like, you know, the ICU that is the Michigan secondary. But, I mean, it is cause for concern, especially when you're talking about replacing a lot of people on the Wisconsin line.
Absolutely. I looked at the schedule when I was going through the other day and we were doing all our predictions, and I said, I'm going to say 2-11-1 teams. You know, I'm going to say Wisconsin. I'm going to say Ohio State, and I feel confident with that. I mean, Iowa obviously leads the league in, like, most badass defensive plays, but...
Fine,
no
be that way.
No offensive line, man.
Be that way, Graham. See if I care.
Well, Graham, here's a question for you. I want to follow up on the idea of the you know, 11-1 tie. When you see Ohio State and Wisconsin going head to head, who wins that game?
Well, I mean, you just look at history. John Franz, my co-editor over at Off Tackle, always says, "I fear Wisconsin. I fear Wisconsin." Well, you fear them, but you keep beating them. So why not just keep predicting Ohio State to beat Wisconsin?
So then who knocks off Ohio State then, Graham?
What's that?
Who knocks off Ohio State then in that scenario?
Yeah, I'm going to have to look at my prediction there, but I believe I had them losing to – did they play Iowa?
They play Iowa at Iowa.
Yeah, I think that was the one.
Okay, I'll let you off the hook then.
I think that's a fair one. I mean, I think Ohio State's going to drop either Wisconsin or at Iowa, maybe both, because neither of those are cakewalks by stretch. And frankly, I'm just still not sold on Terrell Pryor as a real Big Ten quarterback.
Yeah, I'm done with that.
Well, didn't you hear, guys? Didn't you hear? He's our only Heisman hope.
What a load. The fact that John Clay has not gotten more hype as a Heisman candidate is frankly criminal. I mean, the guy is going to lose.
I wrote a whole damn article about this. God, you can't give it to workhorse backs unless they play for the national championship team. Mark Ingram had 1,700 yards rushing or something, probably one good highlight run, and it was an easy win for him. I mean, you got to be kidding me. The Heisman, you know, goes to the
best player of the best team. That really is what it comes down to anymore. Unless there's somebody who just absolutely jumped out of the gym great. It's the best player on the best team.
Yeah.
Get off my lawn, you kids.
Yes.
Or Tim Tebow. Or Tim Tebow. Hey, you guys see Tebow play the other day?
Wow. Shocking. Hey, you hear about Brett Favre?
Who's Brett Favre?
Oh, with that, I think we should probably let you go.
Yeah.
But, hey, we want to... thank you for coming on, and remind our readers and our listeners they can catch you at Off Tackle Empire. Plugging away as usual at .com. Plugging away as usual. Killing the Big Ten.
Love it. Love it. Thank you. We're going to have a nice Michigan State preview up tonight if I don't feel too lazy, and I think it'll be a good closing argument.
Sounds good, bud.
Outstanding, man.
All
thanks
right,
so
thanks
much.
A lot.
Thank you.
See ya.
Well, that, how can I say that wasn't too bad? I think we actually got some real information.
Well, I think we did. That was an excellent call. Rack him.
I would give him a star on my recruiting board. He is a 4-star, bordering on 5.
Nice work.
Yes. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for. Well, why am I saying ladies? There are no women listening to this. Gentlemen,
tell it to my mom.
Gentlemen, I want to thank everybody for tuning in. As always, we'll be back next Friday with more fun, and the lack of sun. And hopefully we'll have another interesting guest for you. We are trying to line up somebody big. If it happens, we'll let you know about it. But until then, I'm Mason Brew Dave. He's Hawkeye State. Thanks so much. We'll see you next week.
Peace out, G.